Hello, everyone. This is Severin. I am your host once again for Greenhorn Radio here on WGXC in lovely downtown Hudson, where it is very cold. I'm joined on the telephone by Chad Cochran, who is calling in from Colorado. Hello, Chad.
Hi, Severin. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I wonder if you wouldn't mind describing for our radio listeners the valley from whence you come.
From south central Colorado. I live in a high alpine valley. Elevation's about 7,500 feet. And it's a very productive farming area, as well as cattle ranching and just not very big towns. And no interstate close by. But yeah, that's the gist of it.
And what are you doing in your valley?
I live on a cattle ranch that my folks and I operate, and then I work as well as a loan officer for Farm Credit here in Monta Vista.
And did you always know that you were going to be involved in ranching? Or more importantly, did you always know you were going to have an off-farm job that involved computers and swivel chairs?
I think the latter, no. I mean, I've always, my passion has always been in the cattle industry, I guess you could say. Ranching and putting up hay and riding horses and checking cows in the mountains. But no, I never thought I'd have a future in the finance industry by any means, but the way it played out, it's really good, and it's the off-farm income definitely helps, as you know, and it just makes the ranch run a lot smoother, and then I get to deal with ranchers and farmers every day. I work Farm Credit as an ag lending institution, and so it kind of complements everything that I'm trying to do, I guess.
So when you talk about ag lending, those who are not super familiar with the way that the agricultural sector operates may not know that there are special banks and banking institutions and credit deals that are available only to farmers. Could you lay out a little bit just the basics of the cooperative Farm Credit and compare it a little bit to FSA and to kind of a commercial non-ag bank?
Yeah, I can try to do that as best I can. Farm Credit, they're part of a nationwide organization with different associations. You know, I think there's 90 associations just in different regional areas. We're in southern Colorado. Oh, can you still hear me?
Oh, I'm sorry, that was my phone. I have technological trouble. I apologize. But now you're fine. We can keep going. We'll cut it out. Let's start over again from what is wait, I'm gonna make sure that doesn't happen again by turning it off. Off. Okay. I apologize. That was not very professional. Let's start again. Let's start again from what is Farm Credit and how does it work?
Well, Farm Credit, it's gonna be like any other bank. It's a nationwide organization with different regional associations. We compete with other commercial banks right in the town of Monta Vista. I mean, our rates are similar to those on different loan products, but we only lend to farmers or ranchers or part-time farmers or ranchers. It's what differentiates us. And We're regulated by the government, but we're not part of the government. We do cooperate with the Farm Service Agency, and I know these names get mixed up a little bit, but the USDA is the Farm Service Agency, and Farm Credit is the more like the private institution. But we work with the USDA and can, just take individual needs as far as what their lending requirements are.
Well, and the thing that's so nice, so I've just come down from the Adirondacks today, which is the Champlain Valley. Now I'm down in the Hudson Valley. And my friend Courtney, she worked for Essex Farm for a bunch of years and worked down here at Germantown Farm and had wonderful success getting a farm start loan from Farm Credit. And because she's a woman, she's considered socially disadvantaged. And because she's the beginning farmer, there's a set aside. And so she was really glad to find that the banks were indeed willing to lend to her. You know, and since she's in the beginning of starting up a farm, there's a lot of capitalization that has to occur. Could you reflect maybe a little on the kind of people that are coming in to come and see you? Like, what are they lending? What are they borrowing money to do? They're starting operations, or they're shifting operations, or what kind of stuff?
Well, I think that, you know, the bigger part of our stuff is definitely the farmers and ranchers that are already established, but we do always have some new young farmers coming in, and we look at those guys, and I mean, I'm a beginning small rancher myself with little equity to begin with, and if it looks like a situation where we could handle the risk, Farm Credit would take the loan, or if there's a little bit more risk involved, we would pass it on to the Farm Service Agency and guarantee it through them. They have programs where you can put, you know, 5 to 10% down on properties, or they can work with us to do a down payment on certain properties, and their interest rates are very, very cheap right now. Just based off of the prime market, they're down, I don't know, I want to say under 2% almost.
Yeah, she was saying 1.35.
Right.
Amazing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so I think if you're a starting farmer or a rancher and with little equity, I think that's something to definitely look into, and you just need to have, you know, a balance sheet, financial statement that shows you what you own, your assets, and what you owe, you know, your credit cards, the other debt, student loan obligation that you have. If you have all of that out, printed out and professional looking, I mean, they're going to look at you with a better eye and hopefully lend you money, I guess.
Well, that's the hope. And the doing it professionally and getting it all laid out and organized is obviously a good thing to do in the wintertime when you're not running around like a farmer or rancher in your case, chasing after animals all the time, and everybody's kind of locked in.
Yeah. And it seems like a simple thing, but you'd be amazed at the people that come in with no business plan of any kind, and they don't understand what a financial statement is, or they don't understand how their income tax, you know, their tax returns are filed, or what numbers go where. And I think just the fundamentals of finance class or something like that would pay off huge dividends, just understanding the basics. And if you're able to come to me as a lender and put a monthly cash flow statement together, that just needs to be, you know, a projection. Doesn't have to be perfect. But if you can show me that, if you can show me your assets and your liabilities, you know, logically, handwritten or computer written, it doesn't matter, just to show that you understand that. That's huge. I mean, a lot of people don't have a clue about putting that together, which kind of boggles my mind.
Well, unfortunately, you won't go far in farming. The sun may shine and the rain may fall, but if you don't have a plan, it may not be that you will stay in that industry, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very, very hard to forecast farming and ranching. There's always been a lot of risk and always will be, but having the knowledge and the capacity to look through it and see what your potential profit, your potential loss is very important.
So now when we're talking about, you know, in your region and also to a certain extent in ours, we have growth sector in pastured, well, in grass-fed beef. And we're coming more from a dairy background or dairy land base, and you guys have a more extensive and range-based systems. But could you reflect a little bit on the kinds of expenses and the kinds of the difference in the plan when you're working on a grass-fed direct market business versus just selling into commodity market?
Yeah.
Does it require more capital to get going?
Well, I don't think so. I think if you're going to be doing the more direct marketing, you're just going to have fewer animals. So it should be less capital investment into it. You just have to look at, I guess, profit per animal and what your revenue stream is going to be coming in. It's hard to say. The smaller deals, you just need to have, you know, a little bit of experience doing it, and some sort of a way showing that you're going to have a market to go to and sell that stuff.
So
would that really answer your question or not? But.
Well, I mean, I suppose that it's true that if you're starting in direct market, then you have, you know, you have the capacity to get a bigger yield per animal because you're selling direct, and that then you wouldn't need to sell as many animals to make a living, but you'd also have to spend more of your time marketing. You know, inevitably, yeah. You'd need to have, you know, cooling and coolers and, you know, display tables and farmers market infrastructure and you know, a way to get to farmers market with your product and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely for people who are just starting in at the beginning, that's generally the route they go. And in our valley, that's been a really strong trend. Right across the park from me here is a diner that sells all grass-fed beef burgers. And they're partnered with a couple other farms together to cooperatively distribute the meat down into the city. Don't you guys have a cooperative down up in your valley too?
You know, we do, and I'm not at all familiar with it. I do know they're an organic outfit in the northern part of the valley. And I think they've been fairly successful with it, but I'm not familiar with the operation on my end of things.
Well, there's lots of things to learn about.
Yeah,
it's hard to keep track of everything.
Oh yeah, personally, we sell most of our beef, just like everybody else, commodity driven. We sell semi loads of calves, but we do feed, keeping feed. I don't know, 10 to 15 calves a year, whether it be grain-fed or grass-fed that we sell locally just to friends and people that want the beef. And, it does take a lot to market it and just logistics of getting it to the customer and getting the meat processed and everything.
Well, especially you guys being so remote. You know, we have the advantage of the city right nearby, so that makes it much easier also to prove that, you know, to prove to the bank probably too. But
yeah, and I think where we're at, and we're not close to any dense population. There's not the market for the you know, the niche stuff like the grass-fed beef and organic vegetables. I mean, there is, but there's not a whole lot. And I think some of the resort communities in Colorado are really big into that stuff, or I know they are. But we don't see a whole lot of that right here in the valley where I'm at.
Well, and that's the thing is if the rural economy is so spread out and there's not a population density and there's not, you know, a strong kind of economy going on, then it's hard for folks to afford the higher prices that local food usually costs. And
Right.
And then it becomes a kind of a chicken and an egg question of, well, you know, what comes first? Do you bring in more, do you start selling more locally? And that starts, you know, bringing more jobs or, you know, do you need to do a kind of a split? Like, sell some stuff. I mean, with beef, it's perfect because you can sell it far distances. But like try to do part of the business in one way and part of the other business in the other, it gets, you know, complicated, but just coming down from, go ahead.
I kind of think that's the way, you know, our own ranch is sort of run, as we try to diversify and sell some of it locally and then, you know, to cash flow, send the rest of it, sell the rest of it commercially, I guess. And I think there's potato farmers and like that other grass-fed cooperative and carrot farmers that are doing the same thing here in the valley.
Oh, I didn't realize they were growing carrots up there.
Yep, there's a big, it's kind of crazy. They grow the carrots here, process them and ship them to California, and then they're packaged and then redistributed everywhere else.
Well, it sounds very efficient.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it is. Hard to say.
So you're,
yeah, we grow
you grow some good carrots and good I saw the beautiful potato foot, the images. It's almost weird. It's almost eerie seeing straight lines like that all the way up to the mountains.
Yeah, that's up here. We only have probably less than 100-day growing season, but we do produce a lot of potatoes, some carrots, some lettuce, some spinach, a lot of barley, a lot of Coors barley, Anheuser barley, some wheat, and then it's covered in snow for the rest of the year, it seems like.
Have you already got snow on the ground now?
Yeah, we've had snow for quite a while.
We just got our first snow. So there you are in the valley, and the snow is covering the ground, and you're in your office on your day job. What's your 5-year plan? How's it all gonna shake out?
What do you mean, like long term, or
like what's your ranch operation gonna do? You're saying you're small and beginning. Well, are you gonna go bigger? Or are you gonna stay small?
I think we run our cows here in the valley on a limited amount of owned ground, that with limited amount of feed resources is the big thing for winter time. And then we run our cattle up in the mountains on Forest Service grazing allotments. But yeah, I think I can see myself working for Farm Credit for quite a while longer, as well as running the ranch on the weekends and in the evenings, and just try to expand little by little. I don't know. I think it seems pretty sustainable for me at this point.
And the valley is going well, and the people are. I was so impressed at Quivira with so many St. Louis Valley. It seems like you guys are kind of organized, and you have enough of you that there's almost like a social scene even.
Yeah. I think we have a lot of interested people here in this sustainable ag side of things. We have a lot of government employees that are really good with the NRCS and the USDA and the Farm Service Agency. And, you know, ag is what drives the valley up here.
Well, thank you so much, Chad. And it's been a great pleasure to have you on, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, thanks, Evan.
Awesome. This is WGXC in Hudson, New York, and that was Greenhorn Radio. Join us again for the first Monday of the month, 2 o'clock. Bye-bye.